Oh, so glad you can join us on a Sunday night here on 760 WJR. Always a pleasure to chat with this gentleman as well. Bill Keenis, the weekend was going fairly well. And then, Bill, about 3 hours ago, a little case of deja vu. It was funny. As he was lining up that kick, I was thinking about that game going back to 2013.
Yeah.
Just before Christmas.
61
and I was
yards.
Watching it with our mutual friend from Fox 2, Greg Cannon. We're watching the game. We're going, he's not going to hit from 61.
No, but he did.
Just one of those, Bill, you honestly, you sat, I don't know what your reaction was. I just sat there like with that state of shock, just going, did I just see what I just saw? I mean, unbelievable. NFL record, 66-yard field goal, and the Lions lose.
You know what, Sean? Shortly after that, I got a call from a good friend, Dean Kleinschmidt, who was worked for us as a head trainer for about 10 years. Dean was the head trainer for the New Orleans Saints for close to 25 years. And Dean told me that he was the head trainer when Tom Dempsey kicked a 63-yarder. And he actually taped Tom's prosthetic spike, if you will, and before the game, and that was Dean's responsibility. And I just remember, even, you know, growing up, I was 12 years old at the time of that kick, but it was national news. If you were a sports fan, everybody heard about it. But a 66-yarder on the last play to win the game, Justin Tucker may be the best ever. And for Lions fans, I'm sure that we all just started, unfortunately, reminiscing so many games over the years with the ending just as impactful, maybe not exactly the same script, but certainly as devastating.
You know, it's interesting, Bill, because I tweeted something like that out. I said, if you have been a Lion fan for any amount of time, like, honestly, I'm being sincere. You shouldn't be surprised. Unfortunately, we've seen so many strange things like that. Through it all, we love them. It's funny you mentioned the Tom Dempsey kick. I don't know if I ever told you this, but Thanksgiving Day 1980, you weren't with the franchise yet, but I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The Bears score on the last play of the game. Then score on the opening kickoff in overtime. And my father and my grandfather were at Thanksgiving dinner, and they're laughing hysterically. And I'm devastated. I'm 10 years old. Well, tears are welled up in my eyes and everything. And then they went down that list. And one of the things they talked about is they were watching the game together in 1970 when Tom Dempsey hit that.
Right.
It's just, I'll tell you what, it's going to make it all that much sweeter when this franchise one day gets it right, and it's going to happen.
Right.
But this is something, unfortunately, you hit the nail right on top of the head, Bill, in a sick, twisted way. We're all kind of sharing battle stories, if you will, of games that ripped your heart out, you know?
Right. And that's the beauty of sport. Certainly the reality of football. And how many times have we believed the game was won? It was over. Go back to the Atlanta game in 17 when Golden Tate scores the touchdown. And we were 2-0 at the time. And the official signals touchdown. And then they go to a review. And comes back and says he was downed on the 1 yard line, 9 seconds to go, 10 second runoff. You lose the game. And it was stunning. And in that play, I think I've actually brought that up when I was still working for the club to our executives, our football side. I think there should be a rule change on that play. And here's why. I understand the 10-second runoff concept. It's for the integrity of the game. A team can't take a penalty to stop the clock or whatever. But normally penalties are assessed when a player or even a coach commits a foul, does something that's not in the rule book. But that Atlanta game, as you recall, the official technically made the mistake. He signaled touchdown, and then it wasn't. So would we have been able to get off a play in 9 seconds? I believe we would have. I mean, teams practice that all the time. So I've suggested that, you know, when that runoff application comes into play, if it's an official's call and not the result of something a coach or player did, there should be one on time down. But there's so many of that. I remember a playoff game in Green Bay, the 94 season. And that was the game, the infamous game when Barry was held to, you know, minus 1 yard.
Yeah.
And I remember, and of course, I'm going to look at things differently, but I've never seen a field in worse condition than Lambeau that day. I swear that they watered it all week just to slow Barry down. That's my story and recollection. Because back then, they only played 5 games at Lambeau, the Packers. They played mm-hmm. 3 at Old Milwaukee County Stadium. So the field should have been in impeccable condition. But, you know, home field advantage, it comes in many shapes and sizes. But in that game, if you remember, Dave Craig was a quarterback, and he hits Herman Moore in the back of the end zone, and he tries to toe tap. And I was on the sideline by that time, and we just erupted for that instance, you know, that second. And then the official waves it off. He was out of bounds. That would have been the winning score. So many of those over the years, so many.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, yeah. Hey, what did this mean in the grand scheme of things? I'm not going to sit here and say what right. it would have meant. It's just another heartbreaker. There's no yeah. doubt about it. And you have to give this team credit. One thing that Coach Campbell talked yeah. about after the game was the grit of this team. Because, yeah. Bill, literally nothing was going on in the first half. It was just right. one of those games where you're going, Baltimore's going to win this game 16-3 or, you know, something like
yeah.
that. And,
yeah.
You know what? They found a little something going. They got something mm-hmm. going with Swift. They kept it simple with yep. Jared Goff. And, you know, unfortunately, I want to get your take on so many people are talking about the play clock running out.
Right.
And
right.
I thought that Gene on CBS did a
Gene Steratore. Yeah.
Yeah. Did a fairly good job of explaining it. It isn't to the second. Usually right. the official on the right. field is going to give every team, not right. just the Ravens, not the Lions. They're going to give every team a little bit more.
Right.
But boy, Bill, that did seem like an inordinate right. amount of time.
You know, I can't tell you how many times I recall that happening in a game in our favor and against us. You look at the clock, it's down. There's no call. You look at the official, and then by that time, the ball is snapped. I remember talking about this to a mutual friend of ours, Matt Barnhart, when Matt mm-hmm. was with me in the Lions. And Matt's the big basketball fan. And he says, they should install a big sign with lights on it, you know, sort of like the 24-second clock. And when that goes down to zero, it starts flashing. I mean, they would have to do it in a way not to disrupt the quarterback's eyesight or sight line of vision, what have you. But yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate. And I don't know what's worse, you know, the kick, you know, the clock or the completion on fourth down. You know, it's just all in all, it's just a gut punch. I mean, that's the only way you can look at it.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Of course, the Lions fall an NFL yeah. record 66-yard field goal, 19-17 to the Ravens. I want to go right. back to something that you said, because I think in sports media, sometimes people are prone to make overstatements.
Yeah.
But something that you said rings at, we might be watching the greatest kicker of all time. And if you don't right. believe yeah. what Bill said yeah. and what I'm backing yeah. up now, look up the numbers. Yeah. I mean, this guy has been phenomenal.
Right. And from all accounts, just an exceptional human being, a tremendous teammate. I mean, you can tell. I mean, obviously, you know, any team's going to react the way they did after that kick. But the Ravens love that guy because they know he's probably the difference between 3 or 4 wins a season for them. And certainly today was one of those. And, you know, the other thing that I wanted to mention today, how ironic, you know, we're talking special teams, obviously, but in the Arizona-Jacksonville game, our friend Matt Prater, he attempts a 68-yard field goal, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it was 68 yards. And that doesn't surprise me, because I've never seen a more powerful leg than Matt Prater's. I mean, it's almost like one of those mechanical deals where you press a button and it just explodes on the ball. And he obviously was close to that distance because another former Lion, Jamal Agnew, catches it 9 yards deep in the end zone and returns it 109 yards. And that's the big risk. And coaches have talked about it. We've seen it so many times. The Auburn-Alabama game years ago.
Yeah.
Where when you're attempting a field goal that long, you've got a lot of blockers on the field, a lot of offensive linemen. And if it's returnable, those guys aren't used to coverage, kick coverage. And Jamal found a lane and he was off. So special teams obviously played a big part in some games today, not the least of which was the Lions.
No doubt about it. We have a lot to talk about. Of course, the 4 o'clock games, we always like to keep you in tune with going on. Some guy named Stafford's having a pretty good game. Maybe
yeah,
one of them.
How about that? Yeah.
Jeez, like, Pete, catch amazing. Up with what's going on in college. Bill, I know you have some thoughts on the big wins for Michigan and Michigan State last night. Don't you go anywhere. We are up against break. When we come back, we'll continue to talk some NFL. I want to get into some college stuff as well. We're talking football. That's what we do on the show. It's Gridiron Wrap. He's Bill Keenest. I'm Sean Belegian. You are listening to 760 WJR. We certainly appreciate our friends at Hungry Howie's and appreciate you listening on a Sunday night. He is Bill Keenest. I'm Sean Belegian. Just, Bill, quickly to let everybody know what's going on in the late games. It looks like the Vikings are about to clinch this game against the Seahawks. They're up 30-17 late in the fourth quarter Dolphins and Raiders, a classic matchup. They are in overtime as the Dolphins scored with 2 seconds left and got a two-point conversion. And as we mentioned before the break, the Rams have a 34-17 lead over Tom Brady and the Bucs.
Yeah.
What a duel between these two quarterbacks. Brady has 394 yards. Stafford has 343 yards. And, oh, by the way, four touchdown passes for the Rams.
Yeah.
What a
Isn't that something? Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I was talking to, as we were watching the Lions game today, and it morphed over after we shook our heads and laughed and cried for a few minutes. Yeah. It switched over to the Rams and Bucks. And I'll tell you what, Bill, there was always such a silly argument in this town about number nine, as far as I'm concerned. Matthew Stafford's a darn good quarterback. And if he hasn't proven it to you yet, he never will.
You're right about that. And I will go to the mat for that young man. I think he's exceptional in every way. And I think what he was able to do with us, with the Lions during his time, football people can understand it and appreciate it. I mean, it's no secret he didn't have a running game for almost the entire time he was in Detroit. A running game that would have caused defenses to game plan for it or to at least be aware of it. We've had good defenses in the past. The Rams, Aaron Donald, watching him today is just, I mean, he is freakishly good, as everybody knows, but couldn't be happier for Matthew. I mean, and what a game buildup this was. I mean, you know, the game of the week for Fox, the afternoon game, and just the buildup and to almost exceed expectations, because it was back and forth there, you know, probably till the middle end of the third quarter. And Matthew, so happy for him. He certainly has been everything and probably more that the Rams could have hoped for up to this point.
You know, it's funny, Bill, that you bring that up, because more often than not, games get touted like this during the regular season. Just one man's opinion, it doesn't live up to expectations.
Right.
And I, as I was watching this today, it kind of reminded me of that Monday Night Football game a couple years back, 3 years back, between the Chiefs and the Rams. Remember that crazy game?
Oh, my gosh.
I remember watching that game with my son. He was home from college and everything. And we were sitting on the couch just laughing. It was like watching a video game. They were playing Madden or something. And
that
was a game that was incredibly hyped up. But, boy, it seemed to live up to the expectations. And I'll tell you what, it makes the afternoon go better. And it eases the pain after a Lions loss like today as well. You know, you get into watching football and, you know, you're enjoying this great game. And that's why we're doing this show, is to talk about this.
Absolutely. And then you also, when you think of Matthew, so many of us think of Calvin Johnson too. And he got his ring today, which was wonderful. And even Calvin, God bless him. I mean, some of the gut wrenching plays that he was involved with, going back to 2010 in Chicago, you know, the bat in the end zone in Seattle. I mean, it never ends, Sean. It never ends. So, but
I still joke all the time. I told this story on the air when I was working with Killer. I was so confused that I kept playing the replay over and over, and I called noted football expert, my 5-year-old daughter, Lauren, into the room. And I said, Lauren, did that man wearing number 81 catch the ball? And she watched the play, and she goes, right. Uh-huh. And I said, well, that's all I needed to hear. And if Lauren calls it a catch, I call it a catch as well. But, no, you're absolutely right. A phenomenal career for Calvin Johnson. I mean, we've been blessed. I mean, for all the heartache, and we talked about some of it. Boy, we between watching Barry, being blessed to watch Barry, and I still say watching Billy as well. I loved Billy.
No, we talked about him last week. Yep.
Yeah, and Calvin Johnson, we've been pretty blessed to see players of that caliber.
And you look at all the teams in town of every sport, generational talent that every sports fan has heard of, knows of, Gordie Howe and Isaiah Thomas, Dave Bing, I mean, and Miggy. I mean, I don't know that we can truly fully appreciate Miguel Cabrera yet. Is great. Al Kaline, Alan Trammell. I mean, from sport to sport to sport, we have truly been fortunate, you know, to grow up in this community and be sports fans here.
No doubt about it. So just a real quick recap to let everybody know, Rams still on top, 34-17 late. I believe that is a final with the Vikings as well. The Vikings end up winning 30-17. They knock off Seattle. The Raiders got a field goal in overtime. Miami gets the ball. Raiders lead the Dolphins 28-25. That has been a crazy game. Coming up tonight, as a matter of fact, we've got Green Bay, San Francisco. That should be a good one tomorrow.
Yeah.
Philly and Dallas. So the football weekend is – Bill, what's your thoughts on the Thursday night game? Are you thumbs up Thursday night game? Or
you know, my feeling – you know, ever since it was instituted is I think the teams that play Thursday night, if it can be worked out, which normally anything can be worked out, should have a bye week the week before. So, you know, they're fresh. There hasn't been any evidence that, you know, teams that play Sunday, Thursday, and then, you know, the following Sunday have more injuries. But that's the one thing I would have loved. And perhaps it still could, you know, happen. Just to put more distance between the previous game, because if you did that, then there'd be no issue. But it's, you know, the NFL schedule may be more complicated than sending, you know, people to the moon. I mean, it's incredible all the variables that go into that schedule. But that's one thing that I think I would have liked to have seen over the years.
You know, for me, Bill, and I'm showing my age and I don't care.
Yeah.
I always thought it was special when ABC had Thursday night football. It was a special thing. And to me, as cheesy as it sounds, they took the special away from it. It was, you know, it always seemed like there was a game maybe a couple weeks before Christmas and they took the special away from it. Does that make sense?
No, it does, because I know, and we're going way back now, Sean. I mean, the first Monday night game was in 1970, the Jets, Joe Willie Namath at the Browns in old Cleveland Municipal Stadium. But to me, the theme music for Monday Night Football was iconic, and you could play that, and any sports fan from our generation would know that. But the other thing that made it just as special, I believe, and again, we're going back, but you know, there was no ESPN at the time. There was no social media, no internet, no Twitter, none of that stuff. So all we did on Monday at school was ask the question, are we going to be on Howard's halftime highlights, you know, and we would beg and do whatever, you know, please mom, please dad, let me stay up to watch the halftime highlights. And I think they probably averaged 6 or 7 games maybe.
Yeah.
And when your team was featured at halftime of the Monday night game, it was a holiday and you got to school the next morning. Did you see that? Did you see that? And it's funny how simple that appears today, but back then it was special.
Yeah, for people that aren't aware, Monday Night Football started at 9 o'clock back
yes,
then.
Yes, so exactly. Yeah.
I had to make so many deals with Dad, please let me stay up till 10:20. All right, you're going to clean your room all this week. I'll do it. I'll make any deal you want, because you just wanted that 15-second highlight.
No
Billy
doubt.
Billy Sims, you know the name. And that distinct Cosell delivery, it was a special moment.
Oh, it was so special.
We'll talk some college football when we come back. Both Michigan State move up in the rankings. Both of them come away with victories yesterday. We'll get into that. It is Gridiron Wrap. He's Bill Kenis. I'm Sean Bellegian. So glad you could join us on a Sunday night right here on 760 WJR. You know, Bill, I have to mention something to you before we move on to college football. I mean, almost as if on cue, my son just texted me, and he's out in L.A., and he goes, Dad, I love you. I have to tell you, I'm at a bar right now watching the Rams-Buccaneers game. Everybody here thinks Matthew Stafford is the greatest. It is so strange looking at him in this Rams uniform. So
isn't that something?
Yeah,
no,
I mean,
no surprise.
You know, I look at somebody like my son. I mean, that's the guy that his whole life, Matthew Stafford was there and everything. Yep. So it's got to be a strange. I mean, it's strange for us, but for those kids like my son that grew up and Matthew Stafford is literally the only Lions quarterback he knows. Yeah. It's a strange thing.
That has to be.
Yep. Always going to root for him.
No doubt.
I will say that. Yep. Just always conducting himself in such a good manner. They end up winning today 34-24, and they improve to 3-0 on the season.
How about that? Yep. Mm. As advertised.
Exactly. Yeah. Michigan State ends up moving up to number 17 in the AP poll.
Yeah.
Number 16 in the coaches poll. Michigan moves up to 14 in both polls. Close games over the weekend, Bill, but you know what they say about close? All that matters is you get the W.
Yeah. No, and in November, no one will care how they did it, just if they did it. And, you know, as far as Michigan goes, Greg Schiano is a very good football coach. And I think he was even rumored, I don't know how many years ago, about a potential candidate at Michigan. But he has done a great job. He did a great job at Rutgers before he went to the NFL. And then since, and I think he took advantage of the transfer portal, much like Coach Tucker has done at Michigan State. And Rutgers is going to be a team that people are going to have to deal with all season long. That was not Michigan playing down to anybody. That was Michigan winning a hard-fought, tough football game. And as far as Michigan State, I'll tell you what, and Coach Tucker referred to it, that win could be transformational and so, you know, just program buildings, program special, because, I mean, they were doing nothing in the second half, obviously. And when they went back in punt formation, I'll tell you what hit me, Sean. We remember our former head coach, Rod Marinelli, you know, great man and a historian of football. And when he was coaching with us, he would talk to his high school coach every week of a game. And that was the impact. We talked last week a lot about high school sports, but that was the impact Rod's high school coach had on him, not only in sports, but in life. I mean, he had a profound impact in Rod in his young life at the time. But what Rod would tell me, and we would talk high school football and college football, that his high school coach always put two guys back on the punt return team. You hardly ever see that anywhere.
You're right.
But when he explained it to me, I started watching high school games differently. He said, you watch a high school game and watch how many yards are lost by the return team because the ball bounces and goes 20 yards behind the returner on the other side of the field because the punters aren't as, you know, as good. They're not as directional as they just want to get the ball off.
Yep.
So consequently the ball's bouncing all over the place. And so Rod said in high school, he said, if it were me, I'd put two guys back there and just have them fair catch it. And at the end of the game, you'll be ahead yard twice because you won't lose any. So when I saw those two guys deep, I thought, wait a minute, has he been doing this all year? I don't know. But then it was clear they had that play called. And it was brilliant to pull that out at that time in the game when the game was slipping away. And I mean, that I don't want to say it saved the season. That's way too premature. But it just told me what that told me, that Michigan State's got a special coach in Coach Tucker. It reminded me of years ago when I was with Washington and Coach Gibbs.
Yeah.
Coach Gibbs would put in a trick play for every game. Would he use it for every game? Not necessarily. But the players were so excited to practice it during the week, whatever it was. We're dealing with young men here. And they get excited too. You could see it every week on TV. And so Coach Gibbs would always have a trick play or two in the repertoire. And Coach Tucker, whoever was interviewed, I read, said they had been practicing that. So can you imagine the excitement when that play is called and it works to perfection and ultimately turns the game around and the Spartans win? I mean, that was incredible.
Yeah, you know what it looks like to me, Bill? It looks like exactly what you're saying. You have a group of guys that have bought in to Coach Tucker and his staff are selling. Yeah. Because not only did that flip the script and tie the game, but when that game went into overtime, you had a Michigan State defense that was opportunistic, picked the ball off, and finally you got a running back in the backfield who's been lighting everybody up. Breaks off one big run, and it's game, set, match. I mean, really, at that point in time, it's a gimme. And Michigan State, to use a Tom Izzo term, survives and advances.
No question.
Hey, you know what? It's exciting. And of course, you can hear the Spartans' next game right here on your home for the Spartans, 760 WJR. Yep. Next Saturday night, as they welcome in the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers of Michigan, they have a tough test. It's never easy to go to Wisconsin. I don't care if Wisconsin's struggling or if they're, you know, the Wisconsin that we've seen so often. Yeah. That is just not an easy place to go to, Camp Randall.
No, that's true, Sean. I think it has some of the same, you know, overtones as Michigan State's game at Miami did last week. And if Coach Harbaugh can go up there and bring a win back, boy, will that set up the season, because you're right. That's probably one of the hardest places in the country as far as college football venues go. So I'm sure that'll be a classic Big Ten, you know, knock them down, drag them out type of game.
And it looks to be a very competitive Big Ten as well. Just in case people didn't see this, Penn State has moved up to 4 in the AP. Iowa at 5, Ohio State at 11, Michigan at 14, Michigan State at 17. So, you know, you've got a slew of teams in the top 17. And oh, by the way, all of them, with the exception, of course, of Iowa, play on one side of the conference. And, you know, for years, it's been hard. Somebody from the East. And maybe, just maybe, this is the year that Kirk Ferentz and the Hawkeyes break through. It's interesting because this doesn't seem to be the Ohio State powerhouse of years gone by. I still think they're the favorite. Until somebody knocks them off, you have to give them that credit. But, Bill, I think a lot of people are starting to think, maybe this is the year that somebody, anybody, can break that Buckeye string.
I was thinking the same thing, Sean. I got to believe that, you know, the other teams are looking at how the Buckeyes have come out of the gates and – They're just not. They don't appear to be the same dominant team. But you know, the good teams get better week after week after week, and you want to peak in November. So it sets up the Big Ten for just a tremendous season.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, Bill. I'll tell you. I know I've told you this privately before. I just love college football. I really do it. High school has skyrocketed, as we talked about last week, but there is just something special about being on campus. I don't care what campus is. Yeah. It is. I was on Wayne State's campus last weekend. And unfortunately, they fell to Saginaw Valley, but you know, whether it be going with your friends up to East Lansing, or, you know, being at Saginaw Valley, or being at Wayne State, there's just something special about being on campus on a college football Saturday.
You couldn't have said it better, Sean. I was in Pennsylvania this past week for the wedding of a nephew,
and listened to the Pitt game driving back. I grew up a Pitt and Penn State fan. And, you know, I have friends and we talk Pitt football. And anytime it comes up, you know, I am convinced, and it may be a ridiculous thought, but I'm convinced that until Pitt, and I don't know if it's even thought of, but I think they lose so much by playing at Heinz Field because they're not on campus. And even the University of Miami, you know, not on campus per se, their stadium, you know. But Pitt, when they played at Pitt Stadium, that's when they won their national title. And they had one of the most dominant programs in the country. And like you said, there is nothing like a college campus on an autumn after a Saturday afternoon in autumn. It's just the energy, the buzz is, it's incredible. And when teams don't play on campus, when they have to essentially travel to their stadium, be it 5 miles, 10 miles, whatever, like some teams do, I think it loses something. And then just the reality, speaking more about Pitt right now, you know, they could have 30,000 people at a game and the stadium's half empty. And the players see that when they come out of the tunnel, they're seeing all those empty seats. So I think the classic, you know, college campus, no matter how big it is, stadium I'm talking about, as long as it's full, it just adds something to the environment on game day.
Those students piling in, it's awesome. I never, ever get tired of it. I just, you know, and you know the drill. Half the kids that are there are just there to be there, you know?
Sure.
It doesn't matter. There's an excitement. There's an electricity that it's hard to find in many different places.
Right.
You find it on Friday nights, that's for sure.
No
doubt
question.
About that.
No question.
All right, last segment of the show. So much to get into. So glad you could join us on a Sunday night. He is Bill Kenis. I'm Sean Bilegian. It is Gridiron Wrap right here on 760 WJR. You know, we were talking some college football, and I am one of those people. I remember plain as day when game day started on ESPN. I even remember when they first took it on the road, one of the many games of the century. It was Florida State Notre Dame. They took it on the road for the first time in 1993. Yeah. But Bill, I don't know about you. That has become a college game day tradition for myself and passed on to my son. And we always want to what hat, you know, Lee Corso puts
Lee
on
Corso.
And everything. But one of the legendary, and I don't use that term very loosely, one of the legendary characters on that show was a guy by the name of Beano Cook. And Beano had this abrasive yet grandfatherly way about him would be the best way to describe it.
Yes.
You were telling me there's a little history with Beano Cook and WJR.
Yes, there is, Sean. I again, my Pittsburgh roots, I became pretty good friends with Beano. And for those that don't know his story, he was the sports information director at Pitt in the 50s with, you know, Mike Ditka and Joe Schmidt and into the 60s. And he, back then it was a different world, you know, a different, you know, sports culture, climate, what have you. But Beano was part information, part P.T. Barnum. And he would come up, one of his promotions back then was Dr. Jonas Salk, who invented the cure for polio, was a Pitt guy. He was from the University of Pittsburgh. And I believe it was Dick Groat, who was a All-American basketball player at Pitt, and went on to play baseball for the Pirates and was an MVP in the World Series in 1960. But Beano came up with this promotional campaign, and he had a picture of Jonas Salk and Dick Groat. And the caption was, "The two greatest shot makers in the world." Because Dick was a great basketball player at Pitt, and Jonas, of course, did his thing with curing polio. So, but the story about Beano and JR, it was, had to be in the early 90s. And at the time, Beano was on, actually at that time, I think he was on the ABC pregame show, and he would have a shtick every week. And, you know, it was hilarious. The one thing I'll say about Beano is he told me after I came up to Michigan, he said his dream would be to be buried wearing the winged helmet. So he had profound respect for the U of M football program and, you know, just for college football anywhere and everywhere. But he loved the University of Michigan, you know, the tradition, the history, all that. So Beano was doing some syndicated radio appearances during that era. So he would be in different markets, you know, and a station would interview him on a Friday or a Monday. So he asked me if I could help set something up for him in Detroit, right? And again, it was the early 90s. So I thought JR carried U of M at the time. I thought that would be a perfect spot for Beano. So I'm not sure who I introduced him to at the station, the sales manager, whoever, the general manager. So he's going to do a weekly hit with JP McCarthy, perhaps the most respected, renowned radio voice in generations, right? I mean, everybody that knows the history of radio knows JP McCarthy. And certainly in Detroit, you know, there was never a bigger media personality than JP. So the first hit is good. I think it was the second week of the season. I don't know that we started the first week, whatever. So it's a Friday and Beano's going to go on at 6:15 in the morning. And then JR is going to, you know, replay the interview later in the JP show. So JP welcomes him on the air and introduces them, and Michigan's playing whoever on Saturday, tomorrow, the next day, tomorrow. And JP says, you know, Beano, you know, Florida State, you know, they run a lot of, you know, 3-4 and they blitz. And he starts asking Beano about strategies, and Beano interrupts JP and says, listen, PJ, that's right. He said, PJ, he goes, I'm the football expert here. You're the disc jockey. You're playing the records. You stick with playing the records, and that's why you have me on your show, so I could talk strategy and tell you about football. And God bless JP McCarthy. He could have. I was getting ready for work, and I think I had a heart attack because I'm like, oh my gosh, this will be the shortest stint in the history of radio because he's not going to survive the show, let alone come on the next week. And JP said, you know what, Beano? You're right. You are the football expert. So what do you think about Florida State's defense or whatever he said? Oh. And it was classic. And when the interview was over, I called Beano and I'm like, what in the world were you doing? Hey, it's good radio. You know, he wanted me to talk football and that's what I did. I talked football. So I will never forget that.
He was that, and just hearing you say it, I can hear that voice. He had that very distinctive kind of gravelly, I hate to use the word again, abrasive voice.
He did. But oh, yeah.
Yet, Bill, he always seemed to me like he had that softer side, that grandfatherly side.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
I think that's why so many people, like yours truly, I grew up loving the guy. And of course, you know, everybody, I think that Ron Paulus is going to win 3 Heisman Trophies at Notre Dame.
Right. Yeah.
But that's what Beano did. That's what made Beano Beano.
Yeah. And he loved college football. I mean, I've never met anyone more passionate about college football, football in general, but in particular college football. And, and Beano was a household name in the sports world back then. In fact, you may or may not remember this. It breaks my heart to tell this. I'm a baseball fan. I mean, I love baseball, but Beano was only football. And back in the early 80s when the hostages came home, when the hostages were released and came home, and 80, 81, I think, Sean, I may have my dates wrong, but they were released and came home, and Major League Baseball gave each of the hostages a lifetime pass to every baseball game for their lifetime, you know. So, you know, pretty wonderful gesture by Major League Baseball. And Beano was on, you know, the scoreboard show that week, or he was doing an interview or whatever. And that was a big story of the week, right? The hostages were the big story in the country. And then the nice gesture that baseball did. So somebody teased Beano up, says, Beano, you know, what do you think about, you know, the baseball awarding a lifetime pass to all the hostages? And again, this is Beano. He loves football, not so much baseball. So they tee him up. What do you think of that, Beano? And his response was, haven't they suffered enough? That was his response. And it became a national story. And again, it just shows his irreverence, but his love for football. Yeah. And
yeah,
that became,
a lovable yeah. character. I mean, he was as abrasive as he could be. And I always used to love when ESPN used to show the blooper tapes and Bino behind the scene getting so ticked because his earpiece wasn't working. Yes. We've all been there before in this business, but the way Bino reacted, it's like you can't help but love him even more. You know, I mean, he was a real guy. That was him.
He really
was.
Yeah, he really was. There's a book about to be published on Bino, a writer from Pittsburgh, and it's got to be classic with all these types of stories in it. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's
for sure.
Hey, I'll tell you what; those guys, though, when Bino Cook, Lee Corso, these guys became household names. Kirk Herbstreit was just kind of a run of the mill quarterback at Ohio State, and he's so tremendous at his job. But you have generations of fans that grew up like me, getting up on a Saturday morning and watching that show. And it really has become an institution over the course
of
30 plus years.
And what's sad in some respects is the current generation doesn't remember Lee Corso was a very good football coach.
Yeah.
I mean, he coached college. He coached in the USFL. He was a good coach, but everybody can't wait to that headwear goes on every Saturday.
Oh, that's for sure. No doubt about that. Boy, it flew by it just like last week. It's always a pleasure chat with you, my friend.
Yes, sir.
Look forward to doing it again next week. Enjoy your week. To our fine producer, Eric Dortch, thank you for all that you do as well. Folks, we'll be here every Sunday night talking football with you, whatever is interesting. If there's something that you think we should touch on, by all means, you know how to get a hold of us. We'll definitely talk about it. Is we're going to be talking all things football, not only the NFL, college, and certainly the prep stuff as well. So for my friend Bill Keenest, I'm Sean Beligian saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on Gridiron Wrap.